Marriage Today presents Striking Your Sexual Match by Jimmy Evans.
Striking Your Sexual Match, and I want to talk about this. This is kind of a play on words here of striking your sexual match. I want to talk about igniting the sexual passion and deepening the intimacy of your relationship. Let me say this. Good sex is always intentional. You may have been, you know, naturally, obviously attracted to each other sexually when you met, but we can enjoy sex for the rest of our married lives. You know, research proves that people are enjoying sex 70s, 80s, longer than ever because we're living longer and because of medical technology. But it's always intentional. It's never by accident. And listen, don't let the devil tell you the lie that if you married the right person, that it would just happen naturally and you wouldn't have to work at it. That's just not true. You always have to put energy into the relationship regardless. But the other thing about striking your sexual match is it's how to take the natural differences that are between us and to make them dynamic rather than dangerous. God made us different by His design. We're very, very different. And when you understand those differences, it's dynamic. But when you don't, it's a very dangerous thing. And so sex demonstrates how different we are, but complementary. When I was in college, I worked at Amarillo Hardware, and my job was to pull pipe fittings in pipe. And so, you know, I could walk up. When I first started, I didn't know, you know, any kind of pipe fitting. And so I walked up one day, and I noticed on my order, it said male pipe fitting. And I thought, what, male pipe fitting? And then I noticed down on the bottom, it said female pipe fitting. And I went to this guy that I worked with, and I said, what's a male and a female pipe fitting? And he was kind of an old, gruff guy, and he said, come here, kid. So he walked me down the aisle of this of the pipe area there, and he grabbed a male fitting and said, this is a male fitting. And then he grabbed another fitting, and he said, this is a female fitting. And he put them together, and I thought, oh, my gosh, hardware people are perverts. You know, they work in a porn shop here. And so it was embarrassing because I thought, I just can't believe they call them male. And I'm doing my hands. I got to stop doing that. But I can't believe they call them that. But it's interesting. God designed us so differently to complement each other. Nature tells us we need each other and we fit. Sex tells us that our differences have a dynamic to them and that we fit. And here's what male and female means. It takes two to make one. God looked at Adam and said, he's incomplete. And then he made Eve and said, they too shall become one. And nothing in our marriage demonstrates that more than sex. And something happens when we're having sex that doesn't happen in any other point in our marriage, something very dynamic and something very important. We are very dependent upon each other. See, if you could meet your own needs, you wouldn't get married. And again, the differences in our sexuality tell us a female needs a male and a male needs a female. But the point is this, it's going to take both of us with a good attitude to meet each other's needs. It's going to take both of us doing our part to be able to have intimacy and sex. I can't do it by myself. If I could, I could be single. But since I can't, I'm depending on you, okay? And our sexuality is also threefold. A lot of times the mistake that we make is looking at sexuality one-dimensionally. In other words, we look at sex and just say, you know, sex is something that happens in the physical realm. It does not. To have sex the way that God intended, it is spiritual, emotional, and physical. And that's what I want to talk about. Striking your sexual match on all three levels, spiritually, first of all, then emotionally and sexually. And let me talk about this for just a minute. The spiritual element of sex. The most important area of intimacy is spiritual intimacy. If you could see the way that God sees, what you would see is the deepest part of you is your spirit. Now listen to what the word intimacy means. It means inner closeness. It means close on the inside. That's what intimacy means. When you're saying, I want to be intimate with my spouse, what you're saying is, I don't want just a superficial relationship. You can be having sex with someone who's a million miles away from you emotionally, and they're checked out. Okay, intimacy means I know you. You've opened up your heart to me, and I've opened up my heart to you, and we're one. Now, when we're born, We are born with a spiritual void. Adam and Eve sinned and they died spiritually. And every single one of us are born spiritually dead. And when we're born again, what that means, I was saved a week before Karen and I got married. And being born again means the Spirit of God, there's a Jesus-sized hole on the inside of us that money can't fill, that people can't fill, that a job or education can't fill. Nothing in life is going to fill the inner emptiness in my life until Jesus comes in. And when Jesus comes in, I'm born again spiritually. My dead spirit becomes alive and God moves on the inside of me. When you're born again, this is why we shouldn't marry an unbeliever. And sometimes we're both lost and then one of us gets saved or whatever. So, but we want to both be believers because when you also have Jesus living on the inside of you, we can now enjoy spiritual intimacy where the deepest part of you and the deepest part of me are in communion. The greatest intimacy is not mental intimacy. The greatest intimacy is not emotional intimacy or sexual intimacy. The greatest intimacy is spiritual intimacy. And Karen and I, people ask us, you know, the secret of our marriage, God. God is the secret of our marriage. God is the secret of why we're together. And the greatest intimacy that we experience is the spiritual part of our relationship. Let me talk about it for just a minute. Here's how to create spiritual intimacy in your marriage. And number one is to respect the spiritual nature of marriage and regard it as sacred. Now, you may have heard people say, it's just a piece of paper. Marriage is just a piece of paper. Marriage is an act of the Spirit of God and it's a covenant. Now, listen to me. The word covenant means to cut. When marriage was, it's a sacrificial permanent bond and it only works that way. When marriage was created, Adam was cut and he bled. Okay. And so blood, Jesus said, this is the new covenant in my blood. Marriage only works as a covenant bond where here's what I'm saying. I will sacrificially love you till the day that I die. A covenant has no end date. If it has an end date, it's not a covenant. So this is permanent until death and it is sacrificial. That's the nature of this relationship. There's a covenant marriage and there's a contract marriage. A contract marriage is what we have in America and it's cheap and it's as worthless as the paper that it's written on. A contract marriage says this. I'm going to protect my rights and limit my responsibilities to you. I've got one foot out the back door if you mess with me. I'm going to protect my rights and I'm going to limit my responsibilities. A covenant says I sacrifice my rights and I assume responsibility. Jesus came, sacrificed his right to be the Son of God, came down to earth, lived a miserable life, suffered a miserable death, and now he's our Savior. Who's glad about that? And he didn't do it protecting his rights. He did it sacrificing. And when we come to him and we join in the new covenant, we sacrifice our lives for Jesus. We give our lives to him. Jesus said, he who saves his life will lose it, and he who loses his life will save it. So let me say this. In marriage, you get what you pay for. If you want a contract, it's worth what you paid for it. And what it does is it establishes a very, very shaky foundation for intimacy and sex and a life built together. How can you build a life with someone who's got their bags half packed all the time? How can you build a life with someone who's never demonstrated true sacrifice and has never really demonstrated that they're totally committed to the relationship? Divorce is not an option. We're in this thing for the rest of our lives. It's till death do us part. That is the spirit of a covenant marriage. And listen, every covenant has a seal and a sign. When God makes a covenant, every covenant has a seal and a sign. And they're sacred to God. Covenant signs are sacred. When God made a covenant with Noah, the rainbow was the seal and the sign. When God made a covenant with Abraham, circumcision was the seal and the sign. When Jesus entered the new covenant, the seal of the new covenant is water baptism. And the sign is communion. The Bible tells us that water baptism is the same, Colossians says, is the same as the Old Testament circumcision. And communion is the sign. Every covenant has a seal and a sign, and they're sacred to God. Okay, so what if marriage is a covenant, what is the sign and the seal? Sex. When we get married, sex consummates the bond of marriage. That's the way God designed it. We don't have sex before marriage. That's the way God designed it. And then I come and I commit my life to you in covenant. And then after making that covenant vow, we seal that with sex. And then the sign, the seal means it's a done deal. Jesus, you're Lord of my life. I'm water baptized. It's a done deal. This is the outward sign of an inward decision that I've made. It's not something I've privately done in my heart. I've done it publicly before witnesses. This is the sign, the seal. What's the sign? It is the constant sign to you that I'm walking in good faith with the commitment that I made. So in Christianity, it's communion. I'm baptized one time, but regularly I take communion. What does communion say? I remember. Jesus said, do this in remembrance of me. I remember, Jesus. I remember what you did for me, and I remember the commitment I made to you. I'm walking in good faith, and I'm bearing the sign of the covenant that we have together. What is the covenant sign of marriage? Sex. Every time I'm having sex with you, what I'm saying is, I remember the commitment that I made, that sacred covenant that we made. And I may not like you right now. I may be ticked at you right now. I may have 300 other things to do right now, but I'm going to have sex with you just to remind myself of the commitment that I made. And my attitude will be better afterwards, I'm sure. I'm hoping. Rather than saying, I just don't feel like it. You've got to lay those feelings on the altar if you're going to have a good marriage. Marriage is a sacrificial covenant. It means to cut. It means, baby, to my hurt, your needs will be met for the rest of your life, and they're going to have to wipe the smile off your face with a Brillo pad. That's a good marriage. Marriage is a covenant, and it's not a piece of paper. If you want a piece of paper, that's fine. Go get a contract. But it won't last. But a covenant is what we need. And the sacredness, because the sex is the covenant seal and sign in marriage, it means it's sacred. It's not for anybody else, real or imagined. And I'm tempted. I may be tempted outside of our marriage, tempted with pornography, tempted with lust or whatever, but it's going to be an open issue between Jesus and me. The devil's not going to take me into darkness. I don't care how many people are doing it. I don't care how readily available it is. Jesus and me are going to talk about it every day, because whatever is in the darkness belongs to the devil. What is ever in the light is belonging to God. I talk to Jesus about everything. Let me say, he knows it anyway. You can't hide anything from God. He's got x-ray vision. He sees it, and he's not ashamed of us. But when we keep it in the darkness and we don't bring it into the light, and here's what I'm saying, sex is not just something that I do to pleasure myself, that if you don't do it the way I want it done, I'll get it done somewhere else. Sex is the sacred covenant seal and sign of our marriage, and I reserve it only for our marriage. And let's say, to the degree that you're pure in sex, and I'm not talking about being a prude, because God wants us to enjoy sex and have fun having sex in marriage. To the degree that you're pure is to the degree that sex will be fulfilling for you. I've never met a sex addict that was fulfilled. Ever. Ever, ever, ever. Sex addiction is a bondage, and it sucks the life out of you. But when you commit yourself to one person, to be intimate with one person, that's how sex becomes special. And we just tell ourselves, sex is sacred. It's something only between us, and I'll never justify taking it outside of our marriage. And if I'm tempted, I'm wrong, and I'm going to take it to Jesus and become accountable. But here's the issue. You want to pray together, worship together, make the spiritual element of your marriage the most important area of your marriage. And this is where trust comes from. Let me tell you why I trust Karen, because she's a godly woman. Karen's conscience before God is why I trust her, because I'm a human being and she's a human being, and we're not better than anybody else, and anyone can fall. I could fall sexually, absolutely no doubt about it. What's the insurance policy that I won't? My relationship with Jesus Christ. And us praying together and worshiping together and valuing the spiritual element of our marriage creates the greatest spiritual intimacy and trust in our relationship that then opens the door to sexual intimacy. It is the most, and let me say this now, according to a survey, Sex in America. It was a definitive survey, Grand Central America. The most sexually satisfied couples and most orgasmic women are Christians and married. It puts into men and women's minds this picture, well, if you're married and you're a Christian, well, you know, you're having sex, but the fun is out in the city being single and sexual. The fun's out there on the dark side. It's exactly the opposite. Those people have less sex and less satisfying sex. The best sex is in a Christian, monogamous, heterosexual, committed marriage. Give yourselves a hand. You have the best sex of anybody. It's the truth. Because the spiritual element is the most important element. That's why that we have the best sex of anybody. And I'm not saying you necessarily do, but you may have to work on some issues, but you have the best shot at it when spirituality is important. Number two is the emotional match. Once you get the spiritual thing right, there's the emotional aspect of it, okay? This is a critical element of sexual fulfillment. And I'm going to talk about sex next, okay? Making your emotions match. Here are the top five reasons why couples fight. Top five. Number one is work stress. Number two is money. Three is children. Four is sex. And five is housework. Work stress, money, children, sex, and housework. Okay? And let me tell you why we fight. Because you don't care how I feel. You don't care how I feel about you working all the time. You don't care how I feel about you leaving the house dirty and not helping me when you get home. You don't care how I feel about the kids and the kids being neglected or the kids not being disciplined. You don't care how I feel. And when our spouse is saying something to us, typically it's something that we don't understand because we're not in their world, and a lot of times we don't understand their perspective. But here's what your spouse needs most from you when they're emoting. Validation. Validation. I may not understand what you're saying, but it's important to me because you're important to me. Rather than rolling your eyes, rather than just walking away in disagreement and not validating them. There was a man talking to me last week, and he was telling me about an interaction that he had with his wife, and they have absolutely no intimacy whatsoever. And he was telling me something she said to him, and I said, well, what did you say? He said, I just laughed. And I said, in other words, you didn't validate anything she had to say. And he said, huh? He thought laughing at her, she said something, he just went, huh. And she walked away hurt. And he thought that was intelligent on his part. And I said, what she needed from you was validation. She needed you to say to her, honey, it's important. I don't understand everything you're saying, but it's important because you're saying it. My emotions, listen, my emotions may not be right, but they're real. And I would say, this is an inexact, you know, scientific survey based on me, I would say half the time I'm talking to Karen, my emotions are real but not right. Half the time. So when I'm talking to her about something, my emotions aren't right. I can think of dozens of examples of times I've been talking to Karen about something, but they were real. And so when I'm talking to Karen and I'm talking to her about how I feel, I'm not attacking, I'm just telling her how I feel. Here's what I need from her is, Jimmy, that's important. You know, I validate how you feel. I may not agree with it, but I validate. And when you validate the way that I feel, listen, and I don't have to pay a price for being honest. Research proves that couples who never disagree have bad marriages. I'm not talking about fighting all the time. I'm talking about giving your spouse the right to disagree without paying a price. I'm hurt. I'm frustrated. You're not helping around the house. I feel strained. I feel like I'm taking care of the kids all the time by myself, and you don't care. I feel like you work all the time. I feel like your friends are more important than me. I feel. And emotional intimacy comes from the place of saying to your spouse, are you doing okay? Now listen, you're not a good husband until your wife tells you you are. You know, you can go buy yourself one of those World's Best Husbands t-shirts. It's better for your wife to buy it. Because if you buy it for yourself, you're just trying to let her know. But if she buys it for you, she's trying to let the world know. You're not a good wife until your husband tells you you are. And here's what makes a great marriage, is sitting down with each other and saying, am I doing a good job? Are your needs being met? Am I hurting you? Is there anything I'm doing that's frustrating you? And sitting down sincerely and without any defensiveness and saying, except for serving Jesus, my most important mission in life is to fulfill you. I know you depend upon me for that. You can't fulfill yourself or we wouldn't have gotten married. And I don't want to strand you in a loveless relationship as I go do something else and take you for granted. Am I doing a good job? How can I improve? And when you have two people that conscientious and are willing to open up and not be defensive, and now listen to what your spouse is saying. Karen and I today can open up with each other and talk with each other without fear, but I remember when I didn't want the answer to that question. I would have never sat down with Karen and asked her because she would have answered it. And I would have had to have changed. So emotional intimacy simply means this: I care about your emotions. They might be right or wrong, but they're real. And if I agree or disagree, I will validate what you're saying and give you the right to express it without paying a price, unless you're being cruel, unless you're being mean or something like that. But I want us to have an emotional intimacy, and I want us to be our safe place to each other. Here's the third area, and it's sexual. Striking your sexual match and how to meet your spouse's sexual needs faithfully and energetically. Now, about 1/3 of women are more sexual than their husbands. And to most men, especially younger men, are more sexual than their wives. Now, I want to tell you a dynamic that happens in marriage, and that is men peak sexually when they're about 20 years old. Women peak sexually when they're about 40 years old. Isn't that cruel of God? I mean, you're thinking, why didn't God make us where we peak at the same time? And let me tell you why. He wanted there to be some constructive years in there. And not where we, you know, drop off the face of the earth for several years just having sex and like that. So the men peak sexually at 20 years old. Women peak sexually about 40 years old. So here's typically the scenario that happens in marriage. You have a young couple that marries. Within weeks, she's convinced she married a pervert, okay? Because he wants sex all the time and she doesn't want to feed the monster. If you want to kill a monster, you don't feed it. And so she's thinking, if I keep giving him sex, I'm just feeding the monster, and I want to kill the monster. So I'm going to just look at him, browbeat him, tell him there's something wrong with you. You need to go see Pastor Jimmy. And he doesn't go for that because it's a need that he genuinely has. And for men, they don't need a lot of romancing. I mean, they really don't. Men can be ready for sex at the shortest notice. And just about any place is okay for it. They don't need a special setting. They don't anything like that. They, you know, just out in the woods somewhere, just somewhere with a little privacy, not even complete privacy. They're fine with that. Okay. That's a young man. Okay. Then she, on the other hand, she has to be romanced to be sexual. She's not as naturally sexual as he is. So she has to be romanced, and she has to have a special setting for that. And if he's going to have good sex with her, he's going to have to pay attention with her all day. They're not just going to jump in bed and have sex. He's going to have to pay attention with her all day. He's going to have to be a good husband all day. So that's the way God designed it. So then he gets older. You know, he's getting older, and as he's getting older, his testosterone's dropping, which doesn't mean he doesn't need sex anymore, but it just means he's becoming a little less sexual, a little bit more emotional. All of a sudden, they meet at 40, and that's a wonderful year, 40, because she's reaching her sexual peak. She's not as self-conscious about sex. She's more in tune with her body. She's less afraid, typically, of getting pregnant. And so all of a sudden, now, this is a pretty good time in life right here, is 40. And now he starts getting older, and as he's getting older, his testosterone's dropping, and now all of a sudden, he can't perform as quickly as he used to. And he needs a little bit of romancing. And he's saying, I don't want my wife just get in bed and have sex with me. I want her to talk with me before. And she says, honey, I want sex. And he says, I have a headache. I have a headache. What? It's like a role reversal. It's really kind of like a payback. Remember that headache you had for 3 years? Now I've got it. And so let me talk about matching libidos for just a minute. You'll very rarely have matching libidos unless you buy some kind of a drug that I don't know of. matching libidos. And what matching, this is what, again, the devil wants you to think that there's a person out there for you that they're always going to feel just like you feel and what just want just what you want. And every time you look at each other, it just happens, you know. You jump in bed, it happens. But you're married to this dud, and you say you want sex, and that's the last thing on her mind, and you're thinking, I wish I had a sexual wife. Then maybe it's, I wish I had a sexual life. Okay, listen, matching libidos. It doesn't happen very often. But let me say, there are those times in marriage where you have matching libidos and you have sex. It's fantastic. You both want the same thing at the same time. You have fantastic sex. Have it. First of all, wherever you are, have it. Okay. When you get finished, okay, go to the trophy shop. Buy a plaque. And on the plaque, have it engraved and said, at this moment in time and at this place, we had matching libidos and had great sex. Go home and hang it wherever you had sex. And maybe in your lifetime, you'll accumulate several. And when you walk by it, touch it, cry, remember, and get over it. Because it doesn't happen that often. Great sex in marriage happens by us committing to meeting each other's sexual needs. I'm committed. And you walk up and pinch me on the rear and say, I'd like to have sex, and say, well, it's actually the last thing on my mind, but okay. And here's what happens. You weren't thinking about it before, but the more sex you have, the more sex you can have. You use it or lose it. And you may not have been interested before, but during the act, you become interested. And the bonding happens. Hundreds of powerful chemicals and hormones are released in our bodies to bond us to each other, to create goodwill, and to create get rid of stress. I mean, this is what happens when we're having sex. It kills stress. It literally bonds us together and makes us feel closer. So the issue is, it doesn't matter how I felt about it before. There's only one thing that matters. You're my husband. You're my wife. I am the only place where you can legally and legitimately get your sexual needs met. I will not strain you. I will meet your sexual needs with a good attitude for the rest of your life. Okay. And if there's something wrong with me where I can't, I will quickly go get help. I will not leave you in a relationship where you can't get your needs met. Now, there was a couple here in our church, and she had a physical issue, and they couldn't have intercourse. And they came to see me, and they kind of felt guilty because they were having great sex. But they were using alternate means, not illegal or immoral. But they were just having to be creative because she couldn't have intercourse. And they came in and see me, and they said, by the way, neither one of them would make eye contact with me. But they just wanted to make sure they weren't about to get struck dead by God. And they came in and said, we can't have intercourse, so we're having sex. And she said, here's what I'm doing for him. And he said, here's what I'm doing for her. And they said, we just want to make sure that you know, this is okay. And I said, I want both of you to look at me. And it took them a long time to look at me. I looked at her and I said, now listen to me, good for you. What a great wife you are. You're having a physical problem, but in spite of your physical problem, you're going out of your way to meet your husband's sexual needs. And I said, I am so proud of you. And I looked at him and I said, I am so proud of you. Your wife is not doing well. She's having a physical problem. And you are doing everything you can to receive pleasure and give her pleasure, even though you can't have intercourse, and you're both fulfilled, and you're working hard at making the best of a bad situation. And they left my office just, I'm so proud of them. You may be having a physical issue. Don't strand your spouse in that. You can tell your spouse, I'm having a physical issue, can't get erections, I'm dry, it's painful, you know, whatever I'm going through. Okay, fine. There's always a way around it if you have a good attitude. There's always a way to fulfill each other in a time of pregnancy, in a time of illness, in a time of difficulty. But you can't leave each other unfulfilled. 1 Corinthians 7, again, is a scripture that says, when I get married, my body is the property of my spouse. Literally, read it for yourself. You don't have authority over your body. Your spouse does, for the sake of sexual use, not sexual abuse, but sexual use, and it just means we're one. And you are my only legitimate legal way of getting my sexual needs met. And libidos go out the window. I mean, it's important that we have libido, and if we have a problem, we need to go get help. But the issue is, a lot of times, we don't have the same needs at the same time. Doesn't mean we can't have a great marriage, though. Let me talk for just a minute about understanding your spouse's sexual differences. Now, friends of ours, Dr. Gary and Barb Rosberg, wrote a book called The Five Sex Needs of Men and Women. And this is how different we are. And I'm going to read through these. I hope you'll listen to these because I'm going to tell you about your spouse. They interviewed, I think it was around 1,000 Christian couples in depth, asking them, what are your most important sexual needs in the marriage? And the men and women both answered, okay? And so here are the top five answers of the men and the top five answers of the women. Number one answer of men of what is your most important sexual need is mutual satisfaction. 67% of the men, number one, said, I want my wife to be satisfied. And this is what women need to understand is your husband wants you to be a participant in the sex and to be satisfied in it because it has to do with his self-esteem. In other words, he wants to be a good lover. He wants you to be attracted to him and he wants you to be involved. So he's going to want you to be satisfied. Number one need of a woman sexually is affirmation. Before sex, she wants to be appreciated and she wants you to know that you think she's beautiful. And during sex, she wants you to affirm her and also let her know that she's a great lover and that she's beautiful. Affirmation, that's number one. Number two, by the way, it's the same. It's connection. Men say, out of the bedroom, I want her to be affectionate, I want her to praise me, and I want her to be sensitive to me. And in the bedroom, I want her to connect to me. In other words, I want to feel as though she's paying attention, that she's focused on me. Women say basically the same thing. Outside of the bedroom, women say, I want him to care about my feelings. I want him to be sensitive, and I want a total connection. I don't want to just have sex with my husband. I want a total connection of mind, body, and spirit. I want him to open up to me, and I don't want him to just use me to get his sex needs taken care of. Now, this is interesting in research. Now, listen to what I'm about to say. They find that over the average meal, the average couple tries to connect over 100 times. And you say, what? We're constantly using verbal and nonverbal cues to see if our spouse is interested in us. And we walk by and touch them, or we look at them and smile, or we look at them and just look at them, or we say something to see if they're interested. But what I'm trying to do is to connect. And here's what they find in research. To the degree that you will not let your spouse connect, your chances of divorce dramatically rise. And here's what it means. You look at each other. You affirm each other. When your spouse is saying something, you affirm it, you respond, and you let your spouse know, this is about us. This is about us. I'm interested and I care. I'm connecting, rather than being distracted or disinterested. Connection is very important to both of us. Number three, sex need of a man is responsiveness of his wife. He wants you to say yes to sex. Doesn't mean you can never say no. But yes, and to be interested in it. And unresponsiveness means rejection. It just really does. It's a big need for a man. Same thing for a woman too, but response. Number three, need of a woman sexually is non-sexual touch. And this is hard for men to understand. But what she's saying is, I want him to be affectionate with me outside of the bed. And in the bed, I just don't want him to grope me sexually. I want him to be soft and tender in the way that he touches me. And the more soft and non-sexual men are, the more sexual women become. Okay, number four, important need of a man sexually is the initiation of his wife. He wants you to initiate sex. And I want to say it again. If you're not initiating intimacy with your spouse, there's something wrong with you. Your spouse needs you to initiate verbal affection, physical affection, sexual affection. Very, very important. And if you're not doing that, they're going to feel rejected. But when when a woman initiates sex with her husband, it means everything to him. I mean, it says everything to him that he wants to hear in the relationship. And again, I know that there are women who are more sexual than their husbands, and a man needs to initiate sex with his wife too if he's less sexual than she is. Number four, sexual need of a woman is spiritual intimacy. When women were asked, What are your sexual needs? Women said, I want him to pray with me. And I want him to be the spiritual leader of our home. Okay, and a lot of times men would say, I don't know what that has to do with sex. Most of what is important to a woman in sex doesn't happen in bed, it happens before you get in bed. And she's saying, I want you to connect with me spiritually. Number five need of a man is affirmation. He wants to be appreciated for all that he does. Praise. It goes to his need for respect and honor. I want you to praise me for being a good worker. I want you to praise me for what I do around the house. I want you to affirm me and make me feel like that you're not taking me for granted. Number five need of a woman is romance. She wants to be romanced. Now, I did my uncle's funeral years ago, and he and my aunt were married for 40 years. He wrote my aunt a new poem every day for 40 years and left it on the dining room table before he went to work. And I'm seeing the faces of women going, ooh. You can't fake that now. Every day when I was doing his eulogy, my aunt said he wrote me a new poem every day for 40 years. And they had a fantastic marriage. Romance is meeting an unspoken need or desire. You're not in trouble. You're not being barked at. You're doing it because of one reason. You value that person and they're on your heart. This is what romance says. I'm thinking about you when I don't have to. When I'm at work, I'm thinking about you. And there's nothing more important to me than pursuing you. When a woman feels romanced outside of bed, she's sexual in bed. When a woman doesn't feel romance, it's like a man. When a woman initiates sex with her husband and she's verbally and physically affectionate with him, it's game, set, and match. That guy's ready to go see Jesus. I mean, he's in heaven, okay? But when a man is romantic with his wife and he loves her and pursues her and comes out of his world to meet her needs without being told to, she's in heaven. That's, every woman wants to know they're valued. Every woman, I think it was John Eldridge that said this, and it's really true. Every man wants to know one thing, I have what it takes. And every woman wants to know one thing, you're worth fighting for. And when a woman tells her husband, you've got what it takes, and a man tells his wife, you're worth fighting for, that's called heaven. We're different by God's design. And as I've said these things to you, I hope what you listen here and hear is, these are legitimate. They're not, your spouse isn't like you. And you can have great sex. Again, we're different, but we match. Our differences match. When I come into your world and you come into my world, we're going to have the greatest sex ever because we're both respecting each other and both willing to sacrificially come into each other's world. Sex is a very important part of our marriage relationship, and it is a precious gift from God. But from the very beginning, the devil has tried to pollute it. But regardless of mistakes that we've made or things that we've done, we can come back to that place of being blessed by God sexually.
Thank you for listening. This is the conclusion of the series Sex, Love, and Communication by Jimmy Evans. For more information or additional resources by Jimmy Evans, visit the Marriage Today website at marriagetoday.com.